special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
That's right. We are back live in full effect here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, the boxing analyst at the Cold Truth on Sports website, thechtonsports.com. That is thechtonsports.com. You'll be able to check out boxing articles there, among other things in the world of sports. But we are here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. The number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk live on the show here on the Go Long Media channel. All right. We have a pretty much a catch-up show to do here, as pretty much we're on a brief hiatus last weekend, so we didn't get the chance to go through the fights that went on that weekend, including the rematch between Carl Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz. And in that one, Leo Santa Cruz was able to pull off the victory via decision. So he was able to regain that belt that he lost to Carl Frampton last year. That will probably lead to a third bout between those two for that WBA Super Featherweight Championship. And most likely derails a potential fight between Carl Frampton and Lee Selby. That would be a unification bout for the WBA Super and IBF Featherweight Championship. So that was a good comeback fight for Leo Santa Cruz as a response to his loss to Carl Frampton. I mean, Santa Cruz was able to, you know, get the majority of the decision over him. He had the two scores of 115-113, and then Burt Clements gave him a score of 114-114 with, you know, Santa Cruz, you know, having an output of 884 total punches, landing at a 26% clip. Compared to Frampton's 22.5% connect percentage out of 592 punches thrown. I think that was like a lot different than what happened previously. Even though Santa Cruz was much more active in the first fight, he had a shorter connect percentage, much smaller connect percentage, and was basically, you know, I would say the percentage was much better for Frampton there, as he connected on 36.2% of his punches there compared to 25.4% for Santa Cruz. But Santa Cruz is able to make the adjustments in order to get the win and give Carl Frampton the first loss of his career. And also, You had on the undercard Mikey Garcia getting a KO win over Dejan Zlatkonen, excuse me, for the WBC lightweight championship. That kind of like opens things up in the lightweight division. He's now there as one of the big contenders for the lightweight division, with other title holders such as Jorge Linares, Robert Easter Jr., and Terry Flanagan. So we may be touching on that a little bit later on in the show, as far as like catching up with, you know, what's going on there. So, but on what has been going on over the past week, first of all, wanted to get into two particular bouts that happened over the course of the week. One, you had a Thursday night card where you did have a welterweight contender in Sammy Vasquez going up against Luis Collazo, who is a veteran. Vasquez had, you know, came off of a loss. He was, I would say he was looking like he was on his way towards a title shot in the welterweight division. I was seeing like Vasquez floating around in the WBA and WBC rankings, you know, when they were trying to get a few things situated while Danny Garcia eventually got the vacant, at the time, WBC welterweight championship over Robert the Ghost Guerrero. And in the process, I would say that he looked like he was going to be, you know, on his way there, because he actually was part of that undercard of Danny Garcia, Robert Guerrero, as he defeated Aaron Martinez at the time. So he was looking to try to get, you know, closer to a title shot, but back in July of 2016, he faced Felix Diaz. Of course, Felix Diaz is of note for his majority decision loss to Lamont Peterson over in Fairfax, Virginia. But here against Vasquez, he was able to get the unanimous decision win, which kind of derailed the hopes of Sammy Vasquez. So he was trying to get back into the thick of things here with the fight against Luis Collazo. Collazo is of note because he had his last fight in July of 2015 at the USF Sundome against Keith Thurman for the WBA welterweight title belt. And he had that notable body shot against Keith Thurman to see how Keith Thurman was able to respond. But while Keith Thurman was in trouble with that body shot, he was able to get out of that round, make adjustments, and end up stopping Luis Collazo. Collazo hadn't had a fight since then. And so he had nearly a 15-month layoff or so. No, actually more than that. It was almost 2 years. So it was almost like a 19-month layoff in between fights. And he was able to go up here against Sammy Vasquez at the Horseshoe Casino in Tunica, Mississippi. You have Luis Collazo there as a veteran, 35 years old, been in the game a long time. Actually, this is going into his 17th year as a professional fighter. He did have, you know, like I said, the fight against Keith Thurman. He did fight Amir Khan in 2014. He did have that victory against Victor Ortiz at the Barclays Center. Also had notable fights against Shane Mosley and Andre Berto and Ricky Hatton. You know, pretty much all of those were losses. But he still, you know, was able to, you know, fight the who's who of some of these welterweight fighters. In response to Sammy Vasquez, who, you know, while has, you know, been in the game only about, you know, four or five years or so, really didn't have necessarily a notable fighter that he's fought up to 2016, where he did fight the Aaron Martinez fight in January of 2016, and then the loss to Felix Diaz before fighting Luis Collazo. And so, with that was Vasquez there with a height and reach advantage. Well, actually, not even a, I wouldn't say a reach advantage, because it was basically like 1 inch between those two, but he did have a height advantage at 5'10". But it looked like he didn't try to use that against Luis Collazo. Looked like he was trying to get into, not in the close quarters, but I would say it was almost like he didn't want to utilize his jab or, you know, keep him away, keep Collazo away from him. With that being said, it was looking like, you know, Collazo was Vasquez was trying to engage with Collazo, and it was basically a mistake for Sammy Vasquez. And then it looked like it showed there in the third round, as while Collazo was nearly backed up into a corner, and they were going to, you know, going at it with each other. Vasquez got caught with a good shot and went down in the third round. He was able to answer the count in that third round, but that kind of like I would say turned the tide for Luis Collazo. I would say that, you know, Sammy Vasquez was favored in this particular fight against Collazo, even though Collazo was the veteran that had the more notable track record. But, you know, even with that, it still seemed like, you know, Luis Collazo seemed to be like the tougher, more grittier fighter, and that in that kind of showed in the fight between him and Vasquez there. It was basically in that, like, within 1 minute left of round three, where Vasquez had Collazo pretty much back to the ropes. And he made the mistake of being overconfident there and got caught with a right hand that ended up dropping him there in round three. And, you know, with that, that kind of, like, turned things around. I would say that Vasquez didn't necessarily think that he would see that coming, and then that ended up dropping him there in round three. And then seemed like it went to the same thing in round six, where they basically got caught in close quarters. But at the 140 mark in round six, Collazo hit Vasquez with a good right hand, and with that right hand dropped Vasquez for the knockout. And that, I mean, here, even though we're like less than a month in, or I would say about less than 2 months in, that that could have been a candidate for knockout of the year there by Luis Collazo. So with that, Luis Collazo ends up getting the KO win. They're going to 37 wins with 7 losses. That is scored as his 20th knockout. And Sammy Vasquez suffers the second consecutive loss there of his career, going down to 21-2. And that pretty much takes him down a lot there as far as being a contender for any belt there in the welterweight division. I would say that now with this win for Luis Collazo, he kind of like tries to get back into contendership for the welterweight division. He was talking about, you know, potential fights that he could have there in the welterweight division, as it's been, you know, very deep and very stacked. A potential rematch against Andre Berto would be a good suggestion there. You know, Andre Berto has, you know, been floating around the welterweight contenderships. He was a highly ranked contender in the welterweight division over the past couple of years, even though he did suffer that loss to Floyd Mayweather in 2015. He did have a rematch win over Victor Ortiz in 2016, but hasn't fought since. They were potentially thinking about having him fighting Danny Garcia last year, around September of last year, but that didn't, that was not put into fruition. So now he's sitting around looking for a fight, and even though there's been a lot of talk between him and Sean Porter fighting each other, it's basically all about, you know, making that happen. Speaking of Andre Berto, it seems like, you know, there's been a few moves in the rankings with him being involved. While he has like kind of moved a little bit downward in the WBC rankings, he's moved upward in the IBF rankings, moving up to number 3 in the IBF below Jeff Horn and Errol Spence Jr. So that is kind of a little noteworthy there that Andre Berto has been able to make moves within the rankings here on these boxing organizations. All right, for those that are listening in, number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. Before I get into the Saturday activity, I wanted to move into a couple of more bouts that were there on that card in Tunica, Mississippi, the Horseshoe Casino that was on Fox Sports 1. You had two young contenders going at it with Eddie Ramirez and Ryan Carl there as part of that undercard. You had Eddie Ramirez going in there at 15-0. He did score a KO win back in September 2016 against another undefeated young prospect in Kevin Watts. So he was going in there as 15-0 with 10 KOs against Ryan Carl, who was there at 13-0 with 9 KOs. Seemed like, you know, both of these guys were, you know, hungry to try to get the win against each other, but seemed like from the second and third, I would say the second round, Eddie Ramirez looked to have the more noticeable difference as far as in-ring generalship and making adjustments to his opponent, while Ryan Carl was looking to just like have a plan A, so to speak. Just looked like he was just throwing, just a throw. He didn't make any defensive adjustments. He didn't move his head. His foot mobility was limited, especially in comparison to Eddie Ramirez. Eddie Ramirez was able to get the more considerable shots starting from that second and third round and moving forward. While Ryan Carr was still, you know, there, still punching, by the time it got into the later rounds, it looked like Ryan Carr was just basically reaching out with his punches, and Eddie Ramirez was still able to make adjustments. And then even before the end of the, pretty much while it was getting to the last rounds of the fight, there was only like one more round to go for that fight between Eddie Ramirez and Ryan Carr. But when Ryan Carr got to his corner, the quarterman for Ryan Carr looked at him, took a good look at him, and said that they didn't want to see him go out for that one last round, and ended up stopping the fight. And so they had Ryan Carr retire on the stool, and Eddie Ramirez gets another win over an undefeated prospect there to go to 16-0 with 11 knockouts. It was a, I would say it was a fairly good fight between the two, but it was nothing that shown that, you know, either fighter was, I wouldn't necessarily say either fighter being ready for the big time, but I would say either fighter being ready for more of the higher ranked contenders within the welterweight division. You know, neither of them are in there as far as the welterweight rankings for the WBC, WBA, IBF, and WBO. So there it was just that you just wanted to see like how both of these fighters looked in the ring to see if they were impressive enough to get bigger fights later on this year and in the future. So with that, I mean, Eddie Ramirez, you know, gets this win here, but I'm not necessarily certain if he is going to get something where he gets a shot against a more viable opponent. I mean, there's nobody out there that's like a Provodnikov or even a Troyanovsky, that would move up, or, you know, a Carlos Molina, a Sammy Vargas, or even a Leonard Bundu would be somebody that Eddie Ramirez could fight and would have a chance against. So, you know, with that being known, I would say that you'll probably see Eddie Ramirez get a probably a same level type of fight in a Fox Sports 1 card or an ESPN card somewhere to build up his record there while he stays undefeated. With that being known, pretty much going to move up towards the card where Chris Eubank Jr. was able to go after a super middleweight championship. But before that, just wanted to add in that on Friday, February 3rd, over in Puerto Rico, Bob Arum had a fight card there with a few fights on that card in Puerto Rico. One of the most notable fight, of course, being Felix Verdejo going up against Oliver Flores for the WBO Latino lightweight title. And there this was his, oh, let's see, his sixth, let's see, yeah, his sixth of that WBO Latino lightweight title against Oliver Flores. And Oliver Flores was coming off of a TKO loss at the end of 2015 to Takashi Uchiyama. That was for the WBA Super World Super Featherweight Championship, and that was by TKO. So he is basically coming off of a long layoff himself there. And so he was going from super featherweight over to lightweight to face Felix Verdejo. And, you know, with that, he was going up against Verdejo. And Verdejo seemed like it was a about where he was basically it was basically like a stay busy fight for him. He was able to score the unanimous decision win over Oliver Flores. So he was able to get that decision win there to stay undefeated at now 23-0. And so he's able to move on there to find another opponent. Here on the BoxRec site for Felix Verdejo, it says that his next fight is planned for June 10th over at the Madison Square Garden Theater in New York City. So you'll be looking for another fight for Felix Verdejo in the month of June over in the Madison Square Garden. So be on the lookout and see if Verdejo is able to keep his undefeated record intact. All right, now moving forward, you have what happened on Sunday over in the United Kingdom, headlined by Chris Eubank Jr. going up against Ronald Quinlan for the IBO Super Middleweight Championship. You had Ronald Quinlan being there as the IBO champion. He was able to score the knockout win over Daniel Gill in October of 2016 to win that IBO Super Middleweight Championship. And so this was his first defense of that title against Chris Eubank Jr., with Chris Eubank moving up from the middleweight division. Chris Eubank, former interim WBA middleweight champion, was the British middleweight champion for 2016, and also had his only loss of his career was a split decision loss to Billy Joe Saunders. And so he was going in there as, you know, the middleweight going up to super middleweight against Ronald Quinlan at 23-1. And it looked like here in this fight that even though Quinlan was the IBO super middleweight champ and scored that win against Daniel Gill, seemed like Chris Eubank Jr. was able to do whatever he wanted in the ring against Quinlan. And so with that, he was able to basically get a TKO win over Ronald Quinlan to win the IBO Super Middleweight Championship. Of course, IBO is one of the secondary boxing organizations, not part of the WBA, WBC, IBF, and WBO. But this puts Chris Eubank in the super middleweight division and makes him one of the notable guys within the super middleweight division. You know, of course, we have the unification fight between Battle Jack and James Gale, where we talk about that one in our last show, with that being a draw. You have Gilberto Ramirez there as the WBO super middleweight champion. And you have Tyron Zug with a WBA belt. So here with Chris Eubank Jr., it seems like he's still looking for one of those notable fights in the middleweight division, but also now with a belt under his waist here at super middleweight, he could look to fight the likes of a James DeGale there over in the UK, or a Gilberto Ramirez for the WBO belt. That's there in the works. You still have the likes of George Groves, Callum Smith, Felix Sturm, all there within the super middleweight division, where he could get either a title shot or be one of the highly ranked contenders within that division. So that is something that we may have to look forward to here in the future. Yes, he is talking about, potentially fighting Gennady Golovkin, but I think that fight is out of the cards. While they say that Eubank Sr. basically negotiated their way out of a fight between Eubank Jr. and Gennady Golovkin, Eubank Jr. was open to that particular fight, but due to contract issues and the like, that was not able to take place. So we'll see what happens here with Eubank Jr. as they are looking to see what other fights are now in store for him with that IBO belt. All right, still going here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. If you want to call in to talk boxing, the number to dial is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, now we're just going to go into a few other news and notes here within the sport of boxing. One of the things that I did want to touch on is the comments of the WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder. There has been a lot of talk back and forth over the past few weeks, and I would say up to the past few months, about potential opponents for Deontay Wilder. And there have been two brought up, over the past few months. And those two fighters are Luis King Kong Ortiz and Jarrell Big Baby Miller. And when Deontay Wilder was asked about those two fighters, he brought up that he says that he has, no particular issues of fighting those guys. However, it seemed like they were not registered in the clean boxing program. The clean boxing program is, a voluntary program that is created by the WBC along with VADA, which is the, voluntary anti-doping council. Our anti-doping association, where it basically says that you get randomly tested, whether you're preparing for a fight or whether you're not preparing for a fight, whether you're in training, whether you're not in training. that, you know, just to make sure that the sport itself is, you know, stays clean. And so, with that being said, there's been a whole little back and forth between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz in particular, because it seemed like Ortiz was open to fighting Deontay Wilder on short notice. Wilder was, you know, it's basically only a few weeks until, you know, it's only like a few weeks until that fight date that Deontay Wilder has is coming up, especially with the original opponent that Deontay Wilder was scheduled to have, Andrew Warzyk, is out of the cards because he got tested positive for a banned substance. And so Deontay Wilder still wanted to keep the date and was looking for other contenders for him to fight. And so with people knowing that, Luis Ortiz is basically putting his hand up and saying, hey, I'm out there. I could fight you. But, you know, Wilder has had this notion of not being open to fighting guys that have been caught in the past for illegal substances. And so, so Luis Ortiz is somebody that is not a guy that he would be interested in fighting in such short notice. And so Luis Ortiz kind of like had a response to that. Just looking here on what they have on fightnews.com in reference to Ortiz's response, Ortiz said that he signed up for the WBC/Veda Clean Boxing Program last September. And more from Luis Ortiz. He says that Wilder is scared, and the more that he can use his failed tests against them, then he will. Wilder and Lou DiBella, who is his promoter, are saying that, you know, Wilder won't fight Ortiz because of it. That failed test was years ago, and since that unfortunate incident for which he was punished, he's been tested a dozen times clean. Now he's trying to say that Ortiz didn't sign up for that clean boxing program. Ortiz says that he signed up last September when he was notified that all WBC contenders need to be part of that new clean boxing program. He filled out the paperwork and the trainer submitted it to the World Boxing Council. He says he has nothing to hide and doesn't have to prove any longer to anyone that he is clean. Wilder is nothing but a paper champion who happened to be at the right place at the right time against the right opponent with, most importantly, the right promoter. That's all he is. He says when he looks at Deontay Wilder, he sees an unsure, scared fighter. He's crazy with his technique and worried about being hit. When you are that worried about getting hit, when you do get hit, you usually get knocked out. That's kind of an interesting set of comments there by Luis Ortiz. That's just something. That's something there that is a pretty much an interesting response by Luis Ortiz is that he's kind of like challenging Wilder to actually either fight him, Luis Ortiz, or to fight a viable opponent. When he says that
you know, that he was able to get the belt, you know, at the right time against the right opponent with the right promoter. He's kind of referring to the fight there against Bermon Stiverne, where Bermon Stiverne actually had two fights against Chris Arreola, one being a draw, and then them fighting again to where Bermon Stiverne was able to get the win against Chris Arreola. And Stiverne, up to this day, has challenged that the fight against Deontay Wilder. He was fighting an illness on top of that, so he wasn't 100%. And ever since then, Wilder hasn't had a viable opponent, according to many within the boxing world. So here, while Deontay Wilder seemed like he was looking for an opponent, he was able to find one here with Gerald Washington. Gerald Washington is currently the number 10 contender within the WBC. I think his record is like 17-0. I'm trying to see if I could confirm that if he's there at 17-0. But you know, he's there at, actually he is 18-0-1, with 12 KOs. He did have a KO win against Ray Austin in July 16th of 2016. Also fought Fast Eddie Chambers at the StubHub Center in April of 2016, and had a split decision draw against Amir Mansour in October of 2015, and fought Jason Gavern to a unanimous decision win in March 13th of 2015. He's there at 34 years old with, 19 fights under his belt. Debuted in 2012. Really started to step up in competition or in experience, around his, I would say his 10th fight or something like that. But even with that, he fought guys like Travis Fulton, who at the time was 21-32-1, and Aaron Lyons at 12-14-1. He is 6'6", with an 82-inch reach. So he'll be a guy that, Deontay Wilder is fighting that is pretty much his height, and almost has the same measurements. This is like in comparison to facing a Bermon Stiverne, who is a few inches shorter, or like Eric Merlina, who is a few inches shorter. Johan Duopop, was a guy that was around Deontay Wilder's height, and kind of like gave him a pretty tough fight there for his 35th fight. But other than that, it's still something where we're waiting on seeing if Deontay Wilder has a kind of like a challenging fight. Yeah, we do know about the whole backstory between him and Alexander Povetkin. But you have this thing here with Alexander Povetkin, and then you turn around and you fight Chris Arreola. And Chris Arreola had his fight before Deontay Wilder taken back to a no contest because he was tested positive for marijuana. But even then, we don't necessarily consider Chris Arreola as a viable contender for the WBC championship after he couldn't get the win against Vermont Severn, you know, that first time. You know, he basically lost that fight the first time and then lost again pretty much a year later. So he lost twice to Vermont Severn, and yet he was able to, you know, get that second shot for the WBC Heavyweight Championship. And so now it looked like he was given a second chance there against Deontay Wilder when he shouldn't have been facing Deontay Wilder in the first place. But with that being known, Deontay Wilder is coming back from, you know, that last fight against Chris Cerioli. He has he has been, like, on the shelf since with his injuries that he had when he fought Chris Cerioli. So he's trying to, like, get back into the thick of things before potentially fighting the likes of Luis Ortiz, Jarrell Miller, or, like you were saying, a possible unification bout between him and the WBO champion. So we're going to be looking out for those there in the coming months. So it's going to be something there where we're going to see that fight between Deontay Wilder and Gerald Washington on February 25th there. So be on the lookouts for that. Speaking of that, there was another fight that was scheduled to be on February 25th. And that was going to involve well-known boxer Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto was scheduled to get back into the ring against James Kirkland. And that was going to be a pay-per-view fight that was going to be on HBO. However, James Kirkland suffered a fractured nose in training, and with you know, fracturing his nose here about a few weeks before, you know, that recovery time will take. That recovery time will take too long for him, so that fight between Miguel Cotto and James Kirkland is now scrapped. It wasn't like that many people were really interested in a Miguel Cotto Kirkland fight anyway. Kirkland hadn't fought in nearly 2 years, and he had that, you know, that vicious you know, the vicious knockout loss to Canelo Alvarez over in Houston. That was, you know, on May 9th of 2015. So he was looking to get back into the ring. He was training with Ann Wolf, who he was most notable for being with, the kind of like get up into the ranks within this division. He didn't lose a fight while Ann Wolf was his trainer, but when Wolf was not part of his training program, he was, you know, he, you know, didn't have as much luck. Now, Kirkland only fought like three times since 2011. And he's turning 34 years old. So, I mean, having this fight here against Miguel Cotto, where he only had three fights within the last 3 years, is something that was kind of like a huge, step up fight, for him. But here, you know, with this injury that he suffered in training. That fight is scrapped between Miguel Cotto and James Kirkland. So we're looking for a alternative fight for Miguel Cotto that may end up being later on this year. They may like push it to either March or April, probably not March, since this was originally scheduled for February 25th, which is the last Saturday of February. So I don't think it would be in March. Probably be like sometime in, I would say, if it's in May, it'll probably be the weekend after the Canelo Chavez fight. So if he has another, if he has somebody else that he could step up to fight against, it may end up being after that Canelo Chavez fight. There was another possibility for Cotto to fight a couple of other boxers. One name that has been brought up is Juan Manuel Marquez. Of course, Marquez hasn't been in the ring in a while himself, so that would be kind of a interesting way to get back into the ring after being on hiatus for a while for Juan Manuel Marquez. So that's one fighter. The other fighter that is out there is Kell Brook. Yeah, that's right. Kell Brook, who is the current IBF welterweight champion, had his latest fight against Gennady Golovkin for middleweight titles. But seems like Kell Brook is reluctant to fight his number one contender. That is now Errol Spence Jr. First, he went on ahead to take a fight against Gennady Golovkin and, you know, suffered a injury to his orbital bone. And so now he's, you know, he's basically been recovering since then. But, you know, while he's recovering, the talks between him and Errol Spence Jr. kind of have been, you know, wishy-washy while, you know, potential fights against Amir Khan and Miguel Cotto have been talked about for Kell Brook. So we'll see here what's going to be happening with Miguel Cotto in the future. All right. One thing here before we get finished with the live session of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I wanted to touch on something here with the WBA regular championship. Seems like within the next couple of weeks, the World Boxing Association had ordered a purse bid between former champion Shannon the Cannon Briggs and Puerto Rican contender Fres Oquendo for that vacant regular heavyweight championship. They were originally called to negotiate on the 2nd of January and given a deadline of 30 days before the purse bid was called. There hasn't been an agreement between them as of yet, and so WBA has ordered that purse bid. The percentage split between those two would be 50% due to the regular belt being vacant, and the minimum amount for the purse bid would be $1 million. The purse bid will be held on February 13th in Panama City, Panama. Of course, ain't no Panama City, Florida, ain't no way. And the winner of the fight between Shannon Briggs and Fast Fres Oquendo will have the obligation to defend the title against Alexander Usyk, who is ranked third. So we'll be looking at the if that purse bid actually takes place there between those two, and if that eventually clears things up within the World Boxing Association. They have been talking about trying to consolidate all the belts that they have, and starting with the heavyweight championship, they're talking about a tournament that would have started off with the rematch between Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko. Of course, that didn't happen. Luis Ortiz was supposed to fight. I think he was supposed to fight Ustinov, and that didn't end up happening either. So none of the fights that they ordered at the beginning of 2016 have actually happened. So with this purse bid coming up, it'll be a little bit before we even figure out what's happening with that situation with the World Boxing Association. All right. This is what I'm gonna do here. Since this is basically a show, pretty much like kind of like void of news as far as the boxing world is concerned. What we're gonna do is we're going to end this show early, and then we're going to be preparing for the next show that will be on February 12th. And February 12th, we're going to kind of preview a couple of events that are slated for the month of February, including the Adrian Broner versus Adrian Ganalos fight and the quote-unquote return of Lamont Peterson as part of that undercard. So we're going to get into that next week. So be on the lookout for that one. And like I say at the end of every show, point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out.